con las huellas, ahí empieza el immigration hold o la investigación sobre tu origen migratorio y ahí tienes que empezar a defenderte.
Para mayor información pueden comunicarse al número telefónico 1-888-624-4752 o visitarlos en su página chirla.org. En Los Ángeles, California, para el Informativo Pacífica, reportó Lolita Macías.
Los invitamos a visitar nuestra página blog en pueblossinfronteras.wordpress.com, donde podrá opinar y encontrar más detalles sobre las noticias de Estados Unidos, América Latina y el mundo desde una perspectiva progresista.
El valor de mi gente es el valor que he perdido.
El presidente Barack Obama ha declarado el fin de la llamada guerra de Irak, anunciando el desalojo total de sus 40.000 soldados del país árabe y prometiendo que el resto de las tropas estarán de regreso a casa para fin de año. Obama añadió que el último soldado cruzará la frontera iraquí con la cabeza alta, orgulloso del éxito logrado y sabiendo que los estadounidenses están unidos en su apoyo a las Fuerzas Armadas. Ralph Schulman es coproductor, junto con Maya Sean, del programa radial Taking Aim.
The withdrawal from Iraq is largely cosmetic. The reality is that the control.
Él dice que la llamada evacuación de tropas norteamericanas es meramente una medida cosmética, pues el control de Estados Unidos sobre la nación árabe no ha disminuido. Añade que en el mejor de los casos es un reacomodo de las tropas norteamericanas para satisfacer las necesidades militares en la región. Brian Becker es director de la coalición ANSWER. Él dice que la presencia militar estadounidense en Irak solo se puede describir como uno de los peores crímenes y una de las peores tragedias de los tiempos modernos. Irak estaba en paz con los Estados Unidos y no representaba una amenaza para ellos. No tenía armas de destrucción masiva y no estaba vinculado a los ataques del 11 de septiembre de 2001, dice, y fue víctima de una agresión premeditada por los Estados Unidos y Gran Bretaña. Añade que cientos de miles de iraquíes han muerto, 5 millones de sus habitantes han sido convertidos en refugiados internos o fuera de sus fronteras, y el país fue despedazado y su población dividida en grupos etnosectarios.
Now the United States is leaving. It's not paying reparations for its crimes.
Becker señala que ahora que Estados Unidos anuncia su retirada, no está pagando reparación por sus crímenes. Los que cometieron la agresión, dice, han escrito libros sobre el tema y lucran ahora ganando grandes sumas de dinero con ello. Y Washington ha construido una embajada como nunca jamás había sido vista en la historia de la diplomacia.
The U.S. Embassy in Baghdad is in a walled compound of 104 acres larger than the Vatican.
Por su parte, Schulman dice que la embajada estadounidense en Bagdad es 104 acres mayor que el Vaticano. La central de inteligencia mantendrá en Irak su base más grande en el mundo y comandos de operaciones especiales del Pentágono seguirán operando desde allí.
The U.S. Embassy in downtown Baghdad has 16,000 people scheduled to work there.
Brian Becker dice que la embajada de Estados Unidos en Irak tendrá 16,000 empleados, 8,000 de ellos serán un ejército privado y el presupuesto del Departamento de Estado para la sede diplomática es de entre 25 a 30 mil millones de dólares para los próximos 5 años. Ahora se puede ver un país que era independiente, dice, y ahora está desolado por la ocupación, enfrascado en una relación semicolonial.
This ruling class is a ruthless, relentless, murderous apparatus that's based upon exploiting.
Para explicar lo que ocurre en Irak, Schulman concluye diciendo que la clase dominante de Estados Unidos cuenta con un aparato asesino e incansable que se nutre de la explotación del trabajo y los recursos de los pueblos del mundo a escala global. Esa es la naturaleza y el significado del imperialismo, dice, y el imperialismo no es otra cosa que la expresión del capitalismo degenerado.
Brian
Becker señala que Estados Unidos mantendrá su posición dentro de Irak no porque le interese su seguridad, sino más bien para mantener una posición estratégica de poder mientras que el país árabe estará ahora con una soberanía nominal. Cifras oficiales señalan que la ocupación de Irak ha dejado 4.500 soldados norteamericanos muertos y 32.000 heridos, y cuando menos el 30% de los que regresan a casa padecen problemas mentales. Por el lado iraquí, cerca de 500.000 de muertos, más de 5 millones de desplazados, desempleo del 27 al 60%, 50% de inflación, 28% de desnutrición crónica en los niños, solo una tercera parte de las viviendas tienen drenaje y el 70% tienen agua. En Estados Unidos, el costo de las guerras, si bien subsidiado por narcodólares de la venta de heroína de Afganistán, sigue desangrando la economía del país y ya se esperan más recortes de programas sociales, sobre todo los encaminados a ayudar a los pobres. En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro agradecimiento a todos los medios que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Lolita Macías y del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPad o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Freak Radio 101.1 FM, and we're Big Light, and we love Santa Cruz. Thanks for listening.
I'm going to put a piece together for the radio station and maybe write something for the Good Times. I can use your name or not. I can use parts of this or not. Okay. I just want to ask you direct questions. You can answer or not, whatever.
Wait 1 second. Do you mind if I film this from behind?
This is fine. Test. Yeah, that's probably better with the sun. It'll work. You have a little of the grass right in front. It'll look like an African tundra. Thought of an idea, making a t-shirt that says I was in the bank and having it around town.
That's great.
And then lots of people who weren't in the bank, even
lots of people were in the bank.
Lots of people.
Catherine Byers was in the bank three different times Friday night. City council hanging out, not doing an investigation, eating cookies and drinking tea and conversing because we had an open house Friday night. Mm-hmm. So she and many other local luminaries were also in there.
Mm-hmm. Who else that you can think of?
Last night I was trying to remember politicians, but definitely just local business owners. And I'll try to come up with a list. We didn't videotape any of those people, but really just kind of a who's who in the community. You know, there's people hanging out, and it wasn't we had an open house potluck Friday night, and then electronic music, and then the party devolved into being hijacked by some more aggressive anarchist types who did painting and stuff on the walls.
I saw the graffiti in the elevator and in some of the rooms. And I was at a meeting the following day. I think that was actually Thursday, the party. And Friday was the aftermath and the meeting, maybe. And at the meeting, people were saying, that's not what we agreed on having. This was a community potluck to discuss what to do with this space, and then it devolved. What was your feeling about that happening there?
The party?
Yeah.
Well, we wanted a strange attractor to bring people in. So we brought the system, sound system in. We elected very quickly to have a potluck and discussion. The discussion never happened because we were just kind of playing host to people who were coming in. And then the music started, dancing started. And then several groups of people looking quite punk rock. And it was it was difficult to determine which group was doing which, but there were some kids just being wild, and another group breaking things up. And I was definitely a father figure, going around and asking them to stop, because we had consensed on no alcohol, no cigarettes, no violence, no property destruction or vandalism. And so I was moving around the space, and I was several times ganged up on. Being called the privileged white male middle-aged authority figure, and they were telling me I should go and I have no place in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was quite a problem. And so really I had to have a hands-off approach after a while, because it looked like, you know, I was ruining my own place to be in there.
Mm-hmm. To back up a little bit, Tuesday.
We entered on Wednesday.
Were you part of the march that ended at that bank there?
No, I was part of the banner hanging caper.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also I was just across the street, kind of watching the space and to determine whether it seemed friendly or not to approach the building.
Mm-hmm. So you went in that evening. Were you in before the police came or after the police came?
I was outside for the duration of that first hour, just working on the banner project. So I wasn't part of the initial strike team in.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't part of the first party team, but I was in trying to facilitate the banners. It was very important to me that we get our messaging on the outside of the banner, outside of the building. For instance, it said, "Reclaim space, reclaim our lives." I really wanted that banner up.
Mm-hmm.
So I put a lot of my energy and time into doing that and not really celebrating much.
Mm-hmm. How much time collected do you think you spent in the bank from Tuesday till last night?
I won't be saying here whether I slept in the bank or not, but I was in and out of the bank on a fairly regular basis. And then the last two nights, I had a definite departure with some of the characters in there, and some of the population began to change in there. The people, some of the core activists who were really trying to do something and make a statement, were replaced by people who didn't have an activist grounding and had more of a kind of a confrontational mode. So it was time for me to leave. It wasn't my place to be anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely not willing to get arrested for somebody else's vandalism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Somebody else's violent tendencies towards police.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Brent, my impression is that you made a choice to be on camera in there during the time when it was being held by people, and stated your name, even your full name. I saw a video posted, and you seem relaxed and comfortable, and actually really clear in your talking about what was going on, and thank you for that. How are you feeling about that now, being clear about being in there, and tell me about your conversation with police about that.
I personally was intent on making a statement about the banking governmental culture around just the inequities of economics between the very wealthy and the poor, and how the very wealthy get rewarded for screwing over the poor. And I think it's clear that that was our point. And so I'm happy as an activist in Santa Cruz using my full name every time and not wearing a bandana. The police started shouting out last night. I was videotaping their entering the building, calling me a coward. Brent, you're a coward. And Brent, you're going down for this. And I started seeing my name in the paper a couple of days ago because the officers had handed me a cell phone. and told me this is a communication device, and I immediately took the cell phone, gave it to somebody, asked that the battery be removed, and demanded it not go into the building. But since then, the phone went missing, and then I saw in the paper that they state that they gave Brent Adams a phone, and he never answered it for days. And really, I don't know who I gave the phone to, but I was not interested in being the go-between. I didn't agree to them to be that person. But seeing my name in the paper several times and on the police department blog as one of the leaders or people who have been talking to the media, it came really close to home. I didn't really foresee that as part of my responsibility. Now I see why people wear bandanas, and I see why the reason for anonymity, because all of a sudden my name's attached to the lowest common denominator behavior that I'm not actually personally responsible for and actually tried to limit and stop. So I'm a little frightened right now. Last night at the bank, as I was trying to videotape, Deputy Chief Steve Clark several times called me out by name and said, "There's quite a bit of damage in there, Brent, and you're responsible. You're going down. You're going to be arrested. Felony trespassing, maybe burglary," he would say over and over and over. And I was like, "You know, I'm not responsible for that. You know who's responsible for that?" In the paper today, Chief Vogel's blog on the Santa Cruz Police Department site, and also on the Sentinel website, it says a prominent anarchist was witnessed, and I'm actually not a prominent anarchist, but I know they think I'm a prominent anarchist, and tying this person to, you know, the charges.
And you've been listening to an interview of Brent Adams with John Malkin about a week ago, which I find very interesting. So I've kind of delayed the opening of my show. I think I may be playing some more of that later. I paused it because coming up next is Bathrob Spears Broadsides. That's a regular show that happens at this time between 6 and 8. 2 hours of civil rights discussion, homeless civil rights interaction with interviews about how people are being treated outside, and a lot of following of Occupy Santa Cruz and associated events such as, well, the occupation of 75 River Street, which you're listening to an interview about, which ended about 10 days ago, I guess. I think it was on Sunday or Saturday night that the folks peacefully left the bank, and it was the previous Wednesday that they occupied it in the afternoon, I think I'm correct on those times or those dates. You're tuned to 101.1 FM, or I should say 101.3 FM. We moved about a month and a half ago. Also, freakradio.org. The name of the show is Bathrob Spears Broadsides. My name is Robert Norris. And the call-in number is 427-3772 if you'd like to call in and chat. There will be an interview, I think, sometime in the next hour with Jeff Norwal, whose name I always get wrong, so Jeff, forgive me. He's an activist around stopping smart meters, who's going to give us an update on how that's been going. Big explosion on that issue at the Board of Supervisors meeting a couple of days ago with the revelation that PG&E is cutting off electricity to people who have installed the prior meters that were being used, not being comfortable with the new smart meters, not having given their permission to have those smart meters installed or having changed their minds about it. We're going to be hearing some discussion about that. Let's hear a little music to begin with. This is an old English protest song which celebrates the English peasant revolt. And I'm going to mention a little bit about the revolt before I play the song. Usually I just play some music and then chat about the song. But in this case, I'm going to do more because I think a little introduction is helpful here. This is all straight from Wikipedia. I don't know how you regard that. I find it certainly kind of interesting source. I'm not sure how accurate, but we'll begin with that, assuming I can actually get it up on my computer. Here we go. It's Peasants' Revolt, and the revolt is the Peasants' Revolt, Wat Tyler's Rebellion, or the Great Rising of 1381, was one of a number of popular revolts in late medieval Europe and is a major event in the history of England. Tyler's Rebellion was not only the most extreme and widespread insurrection in English history, in case you've never heard of it, but also the best documented popular rebellion to have occurred during medieval times. The names of some of its leaders, John Ball, Wat Tyler, and Jack Straw, are still familiar in popular culture, although little is known of them. The revolt later came to be seen as a mark of the beginning of the end of serfdom in medieval England, although the revolt itself was a failure. It increased awareness in the upper classes of the need for reform of feudalism in England, according to the writer, and the appalling misery felt by the lower classes as a result of their enforced near slavery. And there's more on this. The revolt was precipitated by King Richard II's heavy-handed attempts to enforce the third medieval poll tax, first levied in 1377, supposedly to finance military campaigns overseas. Sound familiar, folks? The third poll tax was not levied as a flat rate, nor according to schedule, as in 1379. Instead, it allowed some of the poor to pay a reduced rate, while others who were equally poor had to pay the full tax, prompting calls of injustice. The tax was set at 3 groats, equivalent to 12 pence, or 1 shilling, compared to the 1377 rate of 1 groat, 4 pence. The youth of King Richard II, who was only 14 years old, was another reason for the uprising. A group of unpopular men dominated the government. These included John of Gaunt, Duke of Lancaster, Simon Sudbury, Lord Chancellor and Archbishop of Canterbury, who was the figurehead to what many then saw as a corrupt church, and Sir Robert Hales, the Lord Treasurer, responsible for the poll tax. Many saw them as corrupt officials trying to exploit the weakness of the king. The Black Death had ravaged England some years before, 1348 to 1350, had greatly reduced the labor force, and consequently the surviving laborers could demand higher wages and fewer hours of work. Some asked for their freedom. They often got what they asked for the lords of the manor were desperate for people to farm their land and tend their animals. Then in 1351, King Edward III, predecessor to King Richard II, summoned Parliament to pass the Statute of Laborers. The statute attempted to curb the demands for better terms of employment by pegging wages to pre-plague levels and restricting the mobility of labor. However, the probable effect was that laborers employed by lords were effectively exempted, while laborers working for other employers, both artisans and more substantial peasants, were liable to be fined or held in stocks. The enforcement of the new law angered the peasants greatly and formed another reason for the revolt. Incidents in the Essex village of Fobbing and Brentwood triggered the uprising. On the 30th of May, 1381, John or Thomas Bampton attempted to collect the poll tax from villagers at Fobbing. The villagers, led by Thomas Baker, a local landowner, told Bampton they would give him nothing, and he was forced to leave the village empty-handed. Robert Belknap, Chief Justice of the Court of Common Pleas, was sent to investigate the incident and to punish the offenders. On the 2nd of June, he was attacked at Brentwood. By this time, the violent discontent had spread, and the counties of Essex and Kent were in full revolt. Soon, people moved on London in an armed uprising. In June 1381, Kentish rebels formed behind Wat Tyler and marched on London to join the Essex contingent. When the Kentish rebels arrived at Blackheath on the 12th of June, the renegade Lollard priest John Ball preached a sermon, including the famous question that has echoed down the centuries, when Adam delved and Eve span, who was then the gentleman? In other words, where was the nobility back when things all started? We were all equal then in those days. The following day, the rebels, encouraged by the sermon, crossed London Bridge into the heart of the city. Meanwhile, the men of Essex had gathered with Jack Straw at Great Baddow and had marched on London, arriving at Stepney. Instead of a full-scale riot, there were only systematic attacks on certain properties, many of them associated with John of Gaunt and or the hospital or order. On the 14th of June, the rebels were reputed to have been met by the young king himself and led by Richard of Wallingford, who had presented him with a series of demands, including the dismissal of some of his more unpopular ministers and the effective abolition of serfdom. One of the more intriguing demands of the peasants was that there should be no law within the realm save the law of Winchester. This may refer to the Charter of Winchester, 1251, though it is sometimes considered to be a reference to the more equitable days of King Alfred the Great, when Winchester was the capital of England. At the same time, a group of rebels stormed the Tower of London and summarily executed those hiding there, including the Lord Chancellor, Simon of Sudbury, the Archbishop of Canterbury, who was popularly associated with the poll tax, and the Lord Treasurer, Robert de Hales, Grand Prior of the Knights Hospitallers of England. The Savoy Palace of the King's uncle, John of Gaunt, was one of the London buildings destroyed by the rioters. Richard II... At Smithfield the following day, further negotiations with the king, Richard II, were arranged, but on this occasion the meeting did not go according to plan. Wat Tyler rode ahead to talk to the king and his party. Tyler, it is alleged by the king's chroniclers, behaved most belligerently and dismounted his horse and called for a drink most rudely. In the ensuing dispute, Tyler supposedly drew his dagger, and William Walworth, the Lord Mayor of London, drew his sword and attacked Tyler, mortally wounding him in the neck. Sir John Cavendish, one of the king's knights, drew his sword and ran it through Tyler's stomach, killing him almost instantly. Seeing him surrounded by the king's entourage, the rebel army was in an uproar, but King Richard, seizing the opportunity, rode forth and shouted, "You shall have no captain but me," a statement left deliberately ambiguous to defuse the situation. He promised the rebels that all was well, that Tyler had been knighted, that their demands would be met. They were to march to St. John's Field, where Wat Tyler would meet them. This they duly did. But the king broke his promise. The nobles quickly reestablished their control with the help of a hastily organized militia of 7,000, and most of the other leaders were pursued, captured, and executed, including John Ball and Jack Straw. Following the collapse of the revolt, the king's concessions were quickly revoked. Those involved hastened to disassociate themselves in the months that followed. And that's the story about the Peasants' Revolt of 1381. Despite its modern name, participation in the Peasants' Revolt was not confined to serfs or even to the lowered classes. The peasants received help from members of the noble classes, one example being William Tonge, a substantial alderman who opened the London city gate, through which the masses streamed on the night of the 12th of June, 1381. Although the revolt did not succeed in its stated aims, it did succeed in showing the nobles that the peasants were dissatisfied and they were capable of wreaking havoc. In the longer term, the revolt helped to form a radical tradition in British politics. After the revolt, the term poll tax was no longer used, although English governments continued to collect broadly similar taxes until the 17th century. And that's all we've got, really, about the... there's more, but that's the story about this rebellion in 1381, which happened on May 30th. And I'm going to sing a song. I probably should, but I'll play. I'll also have someone else who sings better than I. Sing a song. Roy Bailey is a great political singer from England. Sang this song a couple decades ago on a record that I recorded onto one of my cheesy little tapes. And I'm going to play for you now. And then we're going to get on with the regular show and listen to some actual voices of Santa Cruz and talk more about Occupy Santa Cruz and the upcoming Reoccupy Santa Cruz on the 17th of December, day after tomorrow, Saturday. A day of reoccupation throughout the country, at least that's what has been called for by Occupy Wall Street people.
Of Kent have met today to put oppression down and joined with Essex valiant sons to march on London town. With Surrey and with Middlesex, with Suffolk, Norfolk too, and gallant lads from Hertfordshire to see the struggle through. With Ball and Tyler, Orr and Lister, Grindcop and Jack Straw. From miles around unto Blackheath the people made their way, and John the priest of Colchester these words to them did say. When Adam toiled to win his bread and mother each his farm, all folk were equal, one and all, and masters there were none, save all and Tyler, Orr and Lister, Grindcop and Jack Straw.
Corpus Christi in the morn we gathered on Bankside. Then boldly entered London town, the gates were opened wide. Oh, John of Gaunt, the traitor, we burnt his palace down. Threw all his treasure in the flood, yet never took one crown. For Gaul and Tyler, all and Lister, grind Cobb and Jack Straw. Then to the temple off we went to flush the lawyers out. We burnt their charters and their books and put them to a rout. They all went scuttling for their lives, a squeaking out with fright. Like imps of hell or sewer rats, it was a wondrous sight. To Ball and Tyler, Orr and Lister, grind Cobb and Jack Straw. Upon the 14th day of June, the king rode to Mile End, and he spoke softly to us all, I am the poor man's friend. Your wrong shall all be righted, all bondsmen be made free. Oh, curse the day we trusted him, for he lied wickedly. To Ball and Tyler, Orr and Lister, grind Cobb and Jack Straw. Field next we met the king, the nobles gathered around. The Lord Mayor struck a killing blow, while Tyler struck the ground. Our masters bared their teeth and smiled to see our hero slain. You have been slaves since you were born, and slaves you'll now remain. Ball and Tyler, Orr and Lister, grind Cobb and Jack Straw. Of England long ago rose to demand their rights. Though they've been dead 600 years, remember them tonight. They raised the flag of liberty, they fought the battle well. They died, but others will arise to ring the freedom bell. Like Ball and Tyler, Orr and Lister, grind Cobb and Jack Straw.
And again, you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM. That was from the album In These Hard Times, and the singer was Roy Bailey. Name of the song, Song of the Leaders, about the Peasants' Revolt of 1381. Well, got lots of tape here, which I think I'll begin by doing the most recent, which is my visit to Oakland on Monday when the port was closed down. A lot of people from Santa Cruz went up there. Gosh, I counted 15 or 20, maybe more. You can actually see George walking around there on the port in freezing cold weather at 3 in the morning. And he's an activist who's down at the General Assembly tonight, and there is a General Assembly even as I speak down at the courthouse today, as there has been every night for the last, 3 months, since October 6th or 7th, in spite of harassment. I guess it's, November, December, I guess it's two and a half months, something like that. In spite of all kinds of attacks on the right of public protest disguised as concerns about public nuisances, public safety, traffic control, regulation of... they don't even bother to give an excuse as to the new restrictions they put on the right of public assembly in Santa Cruz these days. Danette Shoemaker simply issues an edict. She's the head of Parks and Rec, for example. It was her edict that cleared out and made homeless the homeless encampment, which found its home in San Lorenzo Park for 2 months and was a self-serving community down there, self-sustaining, peaceful community. It's the belief of many of us that crime dropped throughout the rest of the city during that period of time and dropped there as well, as people found each other, found a bit of security, a bit of hearth and home. There was food each night. There was a warmth and a place to go in a tent, a place to store possessions. There was also, to some extent, a common purpose, though many people were there for different reasons, and it was mostly people kind of agreeing to be together, some of them very, very much involved with Occupy Santa Cruz, others with their own objectives. And that was destroyed by an edict by Dennett Shoemaker, first an attempt to disguise it as a permit that required them to leave in the middle of November, which the Occupy Santa Cruz folks rejected entirely. Then, as an attempt to get an injunction against them, which sympathetic lawyers put into court, into the federal court, saying, well, we'll talk about that in January, whether you can destroy the free speech rights of people in the park. And then finally, as an emergency order by an Dennett Shoemaker without any explanation or justification, under an administrative section of the municipal code to short-circuit this requirement that the city wait until January. And then that was simply removed. The entire campground was removed by in a massive group of, one has to say, stormtrooper-like police, who huge display of unnecessary, excessive police visibility and force, with many people having their property destroyed, their tents destroyed. Six to eight people were arrested. I'm not sure if it was six or eight. I thought it was six, but the Sentinel says eight. I haven't been able to track that down. Held on $25,000 bail for the crime of, quote, obstructing an officer. And the witnesses' accounts that I heard, had, and which I played on Santa Cruz Free Radio here a week or two ago, stated that they were in this, actually this raid that happened last Thursday morning, they were simply trying to help people gather their belongings and leave in advance of the marching police line, which gave some time to people to leave, but not enough, considering the everything they had down there. And these people were held on $25,000 bail for the crime of trying to assist homeless people, obstructing an officer, excuse me, that was the crime. And then the next day, apparently realizing that was kind of a faux pas to make such a huge bail, they were all released without any bail. And when we went to court on Monday to see what was happening in the case of Gabriella, there wasn't even a charge in court. There was nothing at the arraignment. There was nothing on the calendar. That doesn't mean, of course, that for the next year they're going to hold these charges over people's heads again in an attempt to intimidate and frighten people away from the kind of supportive protest that has been happening not just in Santa Cruz but all over the country in these occupies. So, Occupy Oakland, which you're going to hear about, the Occupy Oakland initiated and supported by occupies throughout the country, the successful attempt to close down all the West Coast ports happened last Monday. And again, you're going to hear a little of that live now. Less of me talking, more of that would be good. Let's see if we actually got that set up. We do. So let's go for it and hear some of that.
For Free Radio, what's your name?
Yeah.
Cue that up. Sorry for the delay there, but here we go.
So we're here at the Oscar Grant Plaza across the street from it. It's about 3:30. NBC News, Occupy Oakland signs, defend Oakland. And here's the woman with a handful of signs.
We have free radio.
For Free Radio. What's your name?
Claire.
And Claire, what do these signs say that you're carrying?
They say truckers have the right to union wages. You know, I'm not sure verbatim, but they cover our three main underlining points, which is solidarity with port truckers. One, to stop EGT union busting, because EGT, the export grain terminal, is union busting the ILWU up in Longview. And thirdly, it's a coordinated attack against the coordinated attack on Occupy.
Fair enough. And what group are you with?
Occupy Oakland.
Cool. And we've been talking with?
Claire.
Thanks, Claire.
Yeah, no worries.
So I'm here at the Who's the What's the Square, Oscar Grant Square, and
read many of the signs stopping GT Union busting in Longview. I'm here with that noted photographer person, the infamous Abby, and I've just purchased a lot of buttons from the button man. And we have poet and people's tribunite on Jack Hirschman doing his thing. So we have a variety of stuff going on here. Crowds. And it looks like a largely white crowd with occasional black face. A lot of beers.
Beautiful day in the Bay.
And
hey, so what's up? You got a hot one?
And folks are dressed for the weather, although the sun is still up. And we have Angela Davis making a speech. Ask me if I care. When I was here, the crowd was similarly in the park, kind of heavy around the edges of the park. I don't know if it's filling the interior of the park, which looks kind of like a swamp as I get closer.
It turned out, I learned later, that the apparently the city had turned on the sprinklers to make the central area not usable as a public area, or at least that was the claim of the person who informed me the sprinklers had been turned on. Indeed, the whole central plaza of Frank Ogawa, also now known as Oscar Grant Plaza in Oakland, was sopping wet and, I wouldn't call it knee-deep in water, but there was a significantly, 1 or 2 inches of water there. So people kind of were crowded around the edges of it. And there were a couple thousand people there when I arrived around 3:30, 4 o'clock.
And some signs are in Spanish. Pedimos buenos trabajos. Hola. There's old Brent from Santa Cruz. All kinds of folks around. End the death penalty. Even a dog or two on a leash. So there is a sort of a large swampy area here which people are not really occupying. Indeed, the crowd is much smaller than during General Assemblies, when I was at here, when this whole muddy area, park area, was full of people. But there's kind of a lot of people around the edges here, I guess. Gosh, I don't know. How many people would you estimate?
Right here?
Yeah. 2,500, says this expert estimator from...
No, I'm just guessing.
Yeah, I have no idea myself.
As well out of a cafe, so... I mean, yeah. That's like what I...
Well, these two might know. Hey, commies, how many people are here? Any idea? What's your guess? Any good at estimating crowds?
About 1,200, I'd say.
1,200, okay. That's
not
another
bad
estimate. I'm getting every estimate I can.
Could be higher.
So you came up alone, or you came up with a group of fellow...
No, just Susan and me.
Welcome to... notice you were here at Occupy Oakland before,
yeah,
right?
I was here. I was right on the port. We couldn't get out with our car. We had made the mistake of parking down there, and then everything got blocked, including us.
Did you come to this actual scene on that day as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, I did. I came in the plaza here in front of... this is Ogawa.
The plaza was much more, which filled with more people, wouldn't you say, at that time?
It was about 3 times, 4 times the plaza at least.
And actually, others have estimated that up at the previous Occupy the Oakland port, and the port shut down on November 2nd, it was like 10 times as many people. But there was still enough people to shut down 3 different shifts of workers at the ports over the entire day of, November, today is the 15th, November 10th, when that happened.
Yeah. Still a lot of people here, I would say.
Yeah, I think we have today the more militant, determined people who will continue through the winter in the actions. They're that kind of people. Socialists, anti-war, pro-worker type people.
And mostly white people, I notice, from this crowd, although we're in downtown Oakland. Kind of interesting, isn't it?
Well, there are a small number of Latinos and a few Asians and even a few Arab Americans here and there.
Mostly,
but it is predominantly Caucasian type people.
Honkies everywhere.
Well, they're the ones who are prepared to be arrested if necessary.
You're prepared.
A person of color.
You're prepared to be arrested,
Mr. White Man.
So easily.
Yeah, I'm prepared to be arrested. I usually am prepared to be arrested if the opportunity is obvious that it's necessary, you know. I'm not seeking to be arrested. My whole attitude is I want this to be as peaceful as possible. That's it. I don't want to see body injuries.
You're not interested in tear gassing, pepper spray?
No, none of that stuff.
Tasering, perhaps?
Hey, and it's noticeable that the news reports are that everywhere else in the other ports, the other 10 ports on the West Coast, there's been very forceful, aggressive police action, and they've closed, they grounded them up and arrested. And here, so far, they haven't done that down at the port.
And I don't actually think that, I heard different accounts that was not actually the case. Although there were instances of different places, Seattle, Portland, of some police action, Long Beach, but also at other places of the successful occupations. And some, there were not enough people to block a port, but enough to make significant protest. And one can follow this on the mainstream media, too, or in the online. You can get more information about the significant nationwide impact of the Occupy Oakland port shutdown. Here's some more.
Well, this may be because it's the largest one, right?
I think it's because Oakland Occupy movement has a reputation of striking back, frankly. I think that's the only reason.
Suggesting violence as some kind of a response here.
No, I'm suggesting that certain groups would retaliate if there was harm done to the peaceful people. And that's always been true in Oakland.
Well,
we have our left-wing militia defenders, let's put it that way.
The People's Army, eh?
Virtually. That's how they consider themselves.
We've been talking with
Nutcracker Nick from Santa Cruz.
Thank you. We have a laughing clown who's not supposed to laugh. What's your name, clown?
Lily.
And how many clowns are at this actual proceeding, other than the politicians who may have snuck in?
Many, 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 but among us, our group, there's a few. There's six or nine.
And you have some white face on your face.
There's also a face on my white face.
You know, you're a white guy.
I'm not a white guy.
You look like a white guy.
I'm a white Jew.
A white Jew?
Yeah. I'm not really a guy.
I see.
I'm kind of a white thing.
We all are, right?
A semi-white, semi-face?
Find the proper terminology. I'm getting confused.
I don't have any proper terminology. There's no confusion here.
Well, find some improper terminology.
How about sleazeball? No.
You are the sleazeball?
No, I try not to be. How about really friendly, nice person?
Where are you from, sir?
Chicago.
And how long have you been out here in the sticks?
2 days.
What do you think?
It's kind of pretty. It's a little too pretty, actually. People are too friendly and nice, you know?
It gives you kind of the illusion of closeness.
Yes, everybody.
When are they going to turn on you?
I know.
How much is the phony California smile?
Well, yesterday I woke up and I found a Californian eating my hand. I had to bat them away.
Eating your hand?
Yeah, well, you know, they creep up.
Animal, vegetable, or mineral?
All three. My hand or the Californian?
The Californian.
I don't know. You tell me you're Californian.
I didn't see the incident. I can't say.
You represent the spectacles.
I just represent the spectacles. Exactly. How's Occupy Chicago doing?
Terrible.
What do you mean?
There's nobody there.
And then how long have they been vacant?
They're next to vacant. There's like four, five of us. No, there's 20, 30 people any given day, and they don't really camp there because they got arrested when they tried to do that the last few times.
When were you given the boot?
That was way at the beginning, months ago, and it hasn't really gotten better since then.
Is it the windy weather that's driven them away?
That's also making it hard. We're putting on some art stuff, and some of it's indoors and some of it's outdoors. We're trying to do a mix of indoor and outdoor.
Have you been going to other Occupies or just this one?
No, I'm just visiting friends here, and this is what we do when we go out and we dress in clown face.
You clown around.
We clown around.
Anything you wish to give us a little amusement before I leave?
I thought this was amusement enough.
A witticism or two, perhaps?
Did Angela Davis finish?
I think she was finished years ago.
Wow! Well, you know, if you spell Star Wars backwards, you get raw rap.
I'll think about that.
Almost.
And regarding Angela Davis, I can never forget the fact that for 2 decades, when she was a professor up at UCSC, she would have nothing to do with activists who wanted to bring to the attention the criminalization of homeless people in Santa Cruz. So I kind of regarded her as this snobby person who wouldn't involve herself at all in any of the local struggles because she didn't want to offend the local politicians. But there are others who pointed out that more recently she's been involved in prison struggles and she's been standing up for Occupy Oakland and other occupations, although when there are thousands of people there behind you, it's not as hard as when there are only a few people at the courthouse as there were a year ago at Peace Camp 2010 or with the Homies for the Homeless demonstration at the Santa Cruz City Hall in 2008 or was it 2007, I'm never sure. Or at any of the other many, many protests where homeless people stood up and tried to defend their right to sleep, not anywhere and everywhere in Santa Cruz, but somewhere. It's still illegal tonight to sleep outside after 11 o'clock at night or to cover up with a blanket. And it's illegal to be at the courthouse on the courthouse steps assembling to discuss that issue or anything else after 7 o'clock at night, thanks to an edict by the county council there, I should say by the chief administrative officer, Susan Mariello. Again, a whole series of unaccountable, highly paid bureaucrats are essentially abrogating the constitutional rights of people locally, just as the Congress is abrogating the rights of all of us nationally, and Obama's going right along with that. Führer Obama has no problem with that, with the authorization of military force, the OMF, the authorization to use military force that is expanding the war on people, which is, of course, called the war on terror, and putting everybody under military commissions who the president designates as a terrorist, whether a U.S. citizen or not, and to be tried in military courts if the Führer so deems it. I'm sorry, the president so deems it. So we have a local as well as a national oppression that is growing and deepening, and we have a resistance to it in the Occupy movement.
We've been talking with Lely.
Thank you, Robert.
And you?
I'm Robert.
Robert.
Okay.
And we have a little rippy hippie going on here. And some shoulder dancing, apparently. There you have it. I'm sorry, no dancing without a permit. And we have a we can shut them down, we can do it sign with a dump capitalism on the other side. And the woman from the World War II, we can do it with her muscular arm out, which people are familiar with, also has a V for Vendetta anonymous mask on. Well, Free Radio wants to know, what do you think?
Having a good time.
Do you see anything up there that you haven't seen before?
What do you mean?
I don't know. Anything that you've seen today that you think deserves note?
No, I think we got a great crowd. I think everybody's here to do a peaceful demonstration, and I think it's going real well.
Looks nice. Thanks.
And we're going to pause briefly. It sounds like this may be an interesting bit of tape recorder in the pocket situation. I'm going to go back now a few days before this. Actually, it isn't a few days. It's just the... today is the 15th. So it actually wasn't the 10th. It was the 12th, where all this happened. This port occupation. Here's a little something that happened a few days before that, which was a protest in Santa Cruz, a demonstration at the county jail against the incarceration of a number of people, Gabriella, Joel, and a number of other activists who were arrested, as I said before, for trying to assist homeless people who were trying to get rid of their property gathered up and leave when the police were mowing down the tents, crushing them, compacting them, throwing them into a vehicle, and essentially destroying property and destroying people's community and homes as part of the so-called evacuation order, which had nothing to do with evacuation. It had more to do with sort of a search and destroy mission, almost, in a military fashion, with 90 to 100 and 110 cops there from different police agencies on Thursday morning a week ago. That evening, actually, it was the next day, on Friday, it would have been, Friday the 9th, of December, there was a protest at the jail, a relatively large one. When I got there, well, you'll hear it was, I guess, like 60 or 70 people making a lot of noise around. I got there to the, at the women's section of the jail where they were around the back on Blaine Street, and you're going to hear some of that.
Kelly announced this Friday afternoon in front of the county building to stand up to repression by the deputies and perhaps by the police as well, announced by Steve Argue. There's a table set into the what will be the trespass zone, and here we are.
Greetings.
All right, so we're talking with
Camille Walker again.
And Camille, you we're a little less cold tonight, but we're pretty much the same location as we were last night when you were defying the law.
True, but right now it's only 5:41, so it's not past 7 o'clock, so I'm not illegal yet.
Unless they decide to post an up.
And actually, my apologies, the we missed the jail protest. This was a, there was a successful jail protest followed by what you're hearing now. Actually, the people who had been held in jail were released an hour or two before, after being held on $25,000 and $50,000 bail in some cases. They were released with no bail, and then, as I mentioned earlier in the program, at least one of them, Gabriella, went to court on Monday and found there was nothing on the calendar that mentioned, even though her name required her to come to that day to supposedly face arraignment for a charge of obstructing an officer. Following that, I had this conversation with Camille, who was arrested on Thursday night, the night before this was, actually a week ago today, where she insisted that she wanted to be in solidarity with the right of people, the entire community, to be able to use the public area around the courthouse to assemble and speak and talk and present their grievances. Even after 7 o'clock at night, the arbitrary time suddenly declared a time after which she would be arrested for trespass. And she was arrested for that along with Abby Samuels, the night before this particular interview was held. And Abby, I guess, just got a citation. Camille actually went to jail. She was released afterward, but she faces a trespass charge and up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. I'm talking to her now about that here.
A sign of some kind.
I don't actually see any signs posted that say that we can't be here past 7. I was told. Oh, they have them on the sides. Oh, okay.
Next to the entrance, the road entrance.
They don't have them here where I was arrested. So, but I was verbally told that I had to leave at 7 p.m.
And
so.
You always should believe what the deputies tell you.
Well, I
always. I swear by them. Sometimes I swear at them. But what happened? What deputy arrested? Tell us about the circumstances of your kidnapping.
I was issued a citation for trespassing, and after I refused to leave, they arrested me. They took me to the county jail. I was held for about 5 hours, and then they released me with a court date of January 19th.
Now, did you have only one citation, or were there two?
I'm not sure if it counts as two, because it's the same violation. It's violation of California Penal Code 602L1, trespassing, misdemeanor trespassing. So I believe it's one count of misdemeanor trespassing. It just escalated to an arrest because
usually if you get one citation and then, as I understand it, several hours later you were arrested. That's
correct.
A separate incident, I would think. Did you get a separate court date?
No, I have the same court date. One time was at 8:15, one time was at 8:30, and I asked the sheriff if they were going to combine them, and they said yes, so I just planned to show up on January 19th and go from there.
Indeed. Now, how did the jail treat you? Give us all the exciting details. Did you make any new friends?
I actually did get a lot of sympathy from the, there were two other female prisoners there waiting to be processed, and one of them, when I explained, you know, they were both there on because of felony warrants, and I explained I was there because I had been protesting, and they, we actually I started a conversation with one of the sheriffs about how he felt about Occupy Santa Cruz, and one of the women who was there under a felony warrant actually started to defend, you know, a person's right to protest peacefully.
The sheriff attacked or did seem to be critical of that, right?
They all seemed a little bit on the fence. We could agree all the way up until the point that until we got to the issue of whether this was public property or not. So they agreed that people have the right to peacefully assemble and peacefully protest, but we couldn't agree that people had that right after 7 p.m. or to do it on the county courthouse steps.
Because after all, Susan Mariello knows best.
I can't comment on that. I don't know. I don't know what she knows. I haven't spoken to her.
Well, she seems to think so. She's the one who's posting these signs. She is the chief administrative officer.
I suppose I'll have my chance to address that issue in court on the 19th.
Or to be undressed by that issue in court on the 19th.
We'll see.
Do you have any other reports about, you know, I understand as I walked up, I was told that the others who had been, a group of people had been arrested for supposedly obstructing an officer. As the campground was dismantled, certain people tried to assist people in saving their belongings from the jackboots as they moved forward with batons to smash and destroy tents and seize property. They were jailed on $25,000 bail, and you say that you heard there's been a positive development?
I was told that five out of the six had been released. The one person that had not been released has not been released because she had a prior conviction or a prior warrant.
Do we know who that is?
I don't know.
Do we know if they're still charged or and have to go to court into arraignment? Or?
I believe there is an arraignment on Monday. I don't really have the details. I think you'll have to ask one of them who is actually marching in front of the jail currently.
And indeed, I went to the arraignment on Monday morning with about six or seven other folks, and the only person who was held was the woman in custody who was charged with a possession of a controlled substance, possession of paraphernalia, and under the influence. In other words, drug war hogwash. The attempt to criminalize people for using forbidden substances that has nothing to do with any real criminal behavior, but that takes up so much space, time, and money in our jails and is really a scandal. Of course, has been for decades. One wonders if maybe in the course of this rising revolt against the corruption of the banks and the war profiteers and the abuses of power by city and county officials trying to cut off protest, that there may also be a rebellion against the drug war, the drug war prohibition that we've been facing, and essentially the terror that we've been living under around this issue as well.
Oh, I'll have to wander on over there and see what's up.
Yes, I think you should.
And what about Socrates? Did you learn anything about Socrates in your reading?
I still have your book. Actually, Tom has your book, and he said he was going to be here tonight at 6 to return it. So.
And I left a book with Camille and Abby and a group of others who were waiting kind of in solidarity with Abby and Camille, mostly Camille. Abby had already gotten a citation. Camille had gotten one but was waiting to be arrested. This was the night before. In anger and in defiance of the absurd and abusive, unconstitutional decision by the county administrative officer that public assembling on the county steps, traditionally a right for the last 150 years, just had to be simply removed at a stroke of the pen for no apparent reason. I lent her a book I called The Death of Socrates, which she didn't get to, apparently, but maybe in her next arrest she will, or maybe in my next arrest I will. This conversation actually happened, I think, before I went over and joined the jail protest, but we'll hear as we move on in this tape.
I actually didn't get a chance to read the book because I got arrested.
Here was an opportunity for you to truly educate yourself.
Yeah, maybe some other time when Tom brings that book back.
Again, we've been talking with
Camille Walker.
Thanks, Camille.
Thanks, Robert.
And thank you.
And it should be noted also that Camille apparently gave a very eloquent speech at the Board of Supervisors meeting day before yesterday, which I'm hoping to get a copy of, as well as apparently there was a very eloquent presentation by a woman, as I mentioned before, who had her PG&E electricity turned off by that predatory mega company because she had removed her smart meter and had an analog meter put in. And that prompted, apparently, later in the day, after initially Mark Stone repressed public comment on that issue, wouldn't allow it to happen, claiming it was an issue that was already on the agenda and hence could not be discussed at oral communications, a decision that I wasn't there, but it sounded inappropriate to me because the issue being discussed, cutting off one's power, is a little different than, let's say, being concerned about opt-out procedures, which is what was on the agenda. The county some months ago supposedly passed a moratorium on the installation of smart meters, which our great law-abiding sheriff, that said very sarcastically, Phil Wowak, has refused to initiate that, to follow the law. Instead, he's been arresting people who are protesters against this, just as he's been having his deputies arrest people around the county building who are assembling to seek a redress of grievances. It's things turned on their head, but that's how things are in, you know, the closing days of a repressive state. Or perhaps, who knows, maybe the salad days of a repressive state. You can't tell what's going to happen next year. People, unless people continue to resist, the state wins. And that ain't any good. We'll see what happens with that.
Well, there also were two peace protesters in front of the county building holding up flags. And we are now walking, Ed Fry and I are walking over to the jail to see if there are noisemakers making noise. And I've got to say, things are relatively quiet, actually very quiet here. I don't see any noisemakers. Even the doors of the intake area of the sheriff's jail are closed. So, looks like the noisemakers have moved on. Maybe they're making noise downtown. So the word is, apparently, the noisemakers have moved to the women's section, indicating perhaps that one of the people who was incarcerated, one or more, are in the women's section. Beginning to hear a little noisemaking here. Could be just a horn from the street. As I walk through the parking lot around the county jail, which has a Bastille-like quality to it. Numerous vehicles are parked, of course, mostly looks like they're official vehicles, white vans and such. And hearing a cheer, looks like somebody has just been released. Perhaps, I'm guessing, it's about, or maybe they're just making noise, it's 5 to 6. And you can hear the tumult in front of the women's jail as a crowd of merrymakers or protesters, it looks like quite a crowd, is creating some noise. And it's quite a crowd. My goodness. Alex, what's going on here?
It's a little civil disobedience, I think.
How so?
Well, you know, some people like the sounds they're making. Other people call it noise, but I call it music.
Unreasonably disturbing noise?
No, I think the people inside are probably have their ears to the wall and are smiling. You know, the people, I mean the inmates, not the officers.
Now, I see it looks like there are at least 10, 20, 30, what, 50 or 60 people here?
At least 50 people, yeah, maybe 75 at the peak.
Now, what are they making noise about, Alex?
The various Occupy arrests and the way the authorities have been carrying out the arrests.
And are people currently being incarcerated from Occupy Santa Cruz?
Yeah, over the weekend, on Wednesday, when they shut down the camp, 6 to 8 people were arrested, and some of those people are still in there, and other occupiers are still in there.
It was actually Thursday, I believe, not Wednesday.
One person made the comment that the occupiers in there were hoping to come out to the camp for a place to live, but now that the camp's gone, they don't have a place to stay. Nice talking to you, Robert.
Fuck prisons is what the sign says. So Alex, while you're photographing, let's see if you can talk and snapshot. They probably can't, no.
And Alex did do a great photographic job. If you go online to Santa Cruz Indie Media, you can see the story, noise demonstration at the county jail in solidarity with the Occupy Santa Cruz arrestees by Alex DeRosi. Fuck prison, tear down the walls is the large banner. There's an audio there, which is probably better than the audio I'm giving you, but it is my audio, and this audio is available for you anytime you go online. Song for the Fallen Down Beautiful Ones. And there's many photographs, some of the scenes inside the jail, seen through the windows, some right outside the main jail, people beating drums and circling the area, some folks circling the railing, and folks standing outside. There was some, you can't see anybody's faces in this. And there was one critic on the Indie Bay who said, you know, how come people are seeing their faces? Aren't they? Are they ashamed? Are they afraid? And as you may have heard earlier, if you tuned in right before my show at 6 o'clock and the interview that John Malkin did of Brent Adams, people get targeted who are completely innocent. And there's people who are arrested for obstructing an officer on the early Thursday morning when there was this attack on the camp and this destruction and of all these people's tents and all their and the dispersal of several hundred people into the bushes, into the wilderness, with no legal place to go. The innocent aren't respected, you know. So some people cover their faces; they don't want to be targeted by the police. And that's quite legal to do that. So those who cast suspicion on that are really casting suspicion in the wrong direction. They need to cast their stones at the police department, metaphorically speaking, of course.
I know we'll catch you a bit later. So we have a... You've been off. Wow, actually, you're kind of on target. There is a... Now we have a folks walking through the parking lot with a banner. There's a mom and a small child walking with us. And a man drumming some... what are you doing, sir, with this drum?
I'm raising attention tonight to our cause.
Are people actually being incarcerated for obstructing an officer?
I don't know. I can't speak on that. I don't know.
Indeed. Well, we'll get back to you. We know we're talking to a anonymous or possibly a man with a name. What do you want to call you?
Oh, me? Oh, I didn't realize this was recorded.
This is for you weren't yet.
I wasn't.
You're now being recorded.
Anonymous is for Dan-onymous.
So we'll call you Dan-onymous.
Okay.
So Dan, when were people released, and do we know any more details about
it? I'm just going off of my text message tree, and it was about 4:30 maybe. Honestly, if you have to ask someone else if you want more substantive.
So you have no first-hand information. This could be a ruse designed to fool all of us.
Other than the fact that I saw them with my own eyes.
How do you know they were the real people? Did you give them an ID check?
No, I did not. I did not give them an ID check.
Aha! Oh, the innocent lured again.
And in fact, as I understand it, Gabriela Joel and others were released several hours or an hour before the protest. Who knows? Maybe the protest prompted the release. But they weren't really released because they still had court dates and they still have hanging over them the threat of a charge anytime in the next year. So it is a really deeply intimidating thing to be facing this kind of prosecution. I've talked to some of these activists who are not happy. Some of them are continuing to organize, but it takes a toll on them. And that is, of course, I think, the objective of the authorities, to shut down this kind of protest. Apparently, the occupation of a vacant bank where there was, frankly, minimal damage done compared to what could have been done, compared to the damage done by the company owning the bank, Wells Fargo, compared to the damage done by authorities daily against homeless people in this city, nothing. Very little. Nothing. And by these particular activists, nothing at all that I'm aware of. Quite the opposite. The activists involved have been involved in peaceful, nonviolent protest. That's been my experience with them, and I'm speaking quite candidly. Anyway, you know, it's an ongoing abuse that can only be dealt with if enough people stand up and refuse to tolerate it. And again, even as I speak tonight, there's a General Assembly, although it's 7:02 and it's illegal for all those folks at the General Assembly to be on the steps of the county building. But if you want to go and provide support, you can do so by standing on the sidewalk if you're afraid to walk in and join the group, although no one has been given a ticket at the General Assembly yet. They tend to wait until the General Assembly disperses, and then they give tickets to people who refuse to leave, who want to stay there with their signs at night and visibly show them to people passing by in their vehicles that they are not willing to surrender to the climate of fear being created by these new rules and regulations by the county authorities and the city authorities.
And there are a few people expressing, well, at least one person expressing his anger through the occasional thump of a passing van, or actually he's passing the van that's stationary. And we're crossing Water Street here. Back to the sacred county building and possibly to a General Assembly. And traffic is being held up while the folks are crossing the street.
The traffic is held up by the activists themselves, and the people who in cars realize there's a protest. They have to wait while the protest crosses the street. Don't need to pay a highly paid police officer. You don't need to have some well-paid official to do this. Individual members of the community can do it, and they can do so as they proceed. Believe it or not, people take care of themselves. It's amazing.
In both directions. And it looks like the group of the front prison tear down the walls banner is moving across. And there's a sign, celebrate free speech here at 6 p.m. So, Tom, you say you have some direct information about the release of the political prisoners?
Allison said that all five of them were released. I talked to her about an hour ago.
And are they charged, or are they released on bail? What was the story?
They're released on their own recognizance, and they haven't been charged with anything yet.
Do they have an arraignment?
They do at 8:15 Monday morning.
And they must have been charged, because they wouldn't have an arraignment if they weren't charged.
I don't know anything about legal.
Actually, I'm wrong on that. They were cited, given a citation by a police officer, but then not charged by the district attorney. When we went there on Monday, as I said before, they weren't on the calendar, and we went up to the court clerk. We found they were not in any way charged with anything yet, but of course they have a year to do that, so tremble.
Yeah.
I don't know either, but that's the standard procedure. So cool. Yeah, I talked to her actually much earlier, and she's quite a vivacious person.
Yeah,
I noticed that. Cool. And an actual attorney willing to help, which is impressive. Down here. We're talking with... No. Anybody want to talk about the rally?
I don't have the energy in me. Sorry, man.
All right. Another time, perhaps. So how did the rally go? Free Radio wants to know. He's whipping out an analysis. A moose horn, perhaps. Well put. Do you have any comment about that? No, just a happy smile. Thank you. Any comments about the rally for our Free Radio listeners who wish some vicarious thrills? No burping into the mic, please. Go ahead.
No, certainly not. I think that this is one of 1,000 rallies that should be happening all over the world, all over the country, all over Santa Cruz, all over the world right now. It's going to take more than reading about revolution to actually make revolution, or reading about reform to make reform, or reading about jails to understand jails.
So, what's your name, anyway?
Eugene Maddock.
And Eugene, are you a professor of
magic, labor?
And where do you labor in the service of labor?
Exactly.
Where?
Oh, I would prefer not to say that right now.
A secret location.
Indeed, a secret location.
Well, what kind of
over the internets all over the world?
What kind of courses do you teach?
History of education, history of the professoriate, history of reform. Any number of courses. Now, those are my specialties, though.
Now, are you a local yokel?
Mostly a yokel, a little bit on the local part.
And have you been involved much with Occupy Santa Cruz?
You can say that. That'd be one way to put it.
So, what's your sense about the nice-looking rally tonight? What's next? What's next? America wants to know.
Well, I would say that while we weren't quite as loud as a football game, we did get pretty damn loud. And I think America wants to know, because America isn't yet out on the streets. When America's out on the streets, then they'll know what's next.
Any comment on that? He shakes his head. Again, we've been talking with that professor of labor,
Eugene Maddock.
Thank you, Eugene. Anything you want to add for those who are laboring and those who can't get jobs?
Stop laboring. It's worthless.
There you have it. A wise man, or perhaps just a wise cracker.
Probably more of the latter than the former.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Folks, getting ready for the General Assembly. Food has been prepared by Gene.
Sorry.
And that's very nice.
Sorry, I love you. Sorry.
And folks are lining up to chow down.
This is the General Assembly of 6 days ago, the Friday night General Assembly. For those who are interested, again, there is a General Assembly happening right now. Unless it's dispersed by now or gone, usually goes for about 2 hours at the county building on Water Street. And you can see it as you drive by, or you can try to park there. But, of course, the city has now put up no parking signs all along the street. For no apparent reason, there's no construction project. It's just a deliberate political decision to deny people access to an area that the city and the county don't want them in. I guess the city is colluding with this, since it's a city agency that handles parking there, even though it's the county that's going after people who are on the property specifically, doing nothing other than exercising constitutional rights. It's pretty grim and pretty amazing and pretty blatant what's going on. There, not only are there no parking signs affixed to each parking meter along the courthouse side of Water Street just as you approach the bridge, but there's also these obstruction devices. They're kind of V-shaped wooden blockaders that have been put into the parking zone, so you can't park there. But apparently, the Occupy Ferry or somebody has removed those and put them on the sidewalk. So people are parking anyway, amazingly enough, violating the parking laws or requirements. I talked to one of the parking meter people who was giving out tickets, and he said they weren't giving out. For us, he wasn't giving out tickets because if the parking signs had been torn down, they didn't feel it was appropriate to give out tickets, even if, you know, I guess if they want to go and try and charge someone tearing down a parking sign, then they can find that person. But the person who subsequently parks there is not to be blamed. They just trying to use a parking space, trying to give the city the money it needs to continue its good work and destroying campgrounds and taking people to court on bogus charges and things of that sort. Let's hear some more.
That looks good. So it looks like the General Assembly has been reduced to, 10 or 20 people. Chris is trying to get people to fill the roles, and so far nobody has agreed.
And it's getting cold out there, so there were smaller numbers of people at the General Assembly, but always enough to do the General Assembly, which has people who don't know will learn if they go there, involves a procedure whereby one person gets the consent of the group to be the facilitator. A couple other people are called stackers, and they choose who speaks next so that whoever raises their hand first gets put on a stack of speakers. There's a vibes watcher who will make sure that if things get uncomfortable, everybody jumps up and starts singing silly songs or some such thing. And there's a greeter who comes and tells people passing by what's going on, if they want to join up. There's a note taker who takes notes so that the specific things done at the General Assembly by consensus, that means everybody has to agree, or at least 90%, I believe, is the figure that's required. And you can go on Occupy Santa Cruz and read about this stuff at the website Occupy Santa Cruz. Also, Facebook Occupy Santa Cruz has a lot of dialogue back and forth. Or just go down there and chat with people. It's not a 24-hour activity as much as it used to be because of the threats of law enforcement and also the increasingly harsh weather at night. It's getting cold out there. But there is, as mentioned before, a Reoccupy movement planned for Saturday in kind of a coalescing of different events. One of them is the Mother's Birthing Day, or birthday, if you will, of Bradley Manning, who is is going to court tomorrow, not to court, actually to military kangaroo court, having been held in military prison for 17 months, most of it in solitary, for the crime of letting the American people know just what the murderous U.S. armed forces are doing abroad and the corrupt politicians and diplomats are doing in our name. That's a no-no, and he has to be tried for that, maybe even sentenced to death. We'll see. So there's a demonstration on his behalf on the 17th. There are anti-war demonstrations happening on the 17th. Homeless people and those who are not homeless but who have lost their property by the county sheriffs and Santa Cruz Police Department spoiling raids around Occupy Santa Cruz or elsewhere in Santa Cruz are invited to come down between 12 and 2 when I and others will be staffing a table and taking documentation as to who lost what property when, so we can apply to the city for financial restitution, and if they don't want to give us restitution, then maybe sue their asses off, either in small claims court or in higher courts. And Fresno, as those who regularly hear this show know, a whole bunch of attorneys got together with the help of Mike and Simone Rhodes and other activists there, and filed a lawsuit that was successful and got $2.3 million from the city of Fresno for the destruction of homeless property, and also forced it put in place a court order that is now being violated, I understand, but that in fact was put in place for several years, was relatively effective or obeyed, that said you shall not destroy homeless property but shall hold it for 60 days as required by state law. So, come on down on Saturday morning, I should say Saturday noon. It's going to be a whole day long. There's also a sing-along, an Occupy song event, which is being thrown by some activists with Occupy Santa Cruz. There is a Reoccupy event that is going to be happening, where there will be reoccupation happening, whether it will be at the courthouse or somewhere else. Frankly, and quite honestly, I don't know. Maybe that will be discussed and decided there. The decision, again, even in the spite of cold weather and police harassment and sheriff harassment and literally theft of property, is the determination to maintain the kind of occupation. At least some people have that desire and have that determination. And there was flowering going on yesterday at the farmers market around that issue. And hopefully there'll be some postings about that on Indy Bay soon. It should have been already, but it hasn't happened yet. So, Saturday starting at noon, all kinds of events in front of the courthouse. There's also a peace rally happening out at 41st Avenue at the Capitola Recruiting Center. It's called Occupy Peace, and this was put out by Sherry Connable. Please join People United for Peace, or PUP, on Saturday, December 17th, from noon to 2. Same time I'll be doing my gathering information I'll be doing some of it, and hopefully others will be doing some of it too. We had a homeless local agree to do some of that at noon on Saturday. Hopefully he'll be there to get information. But on noon 2, there'll be a holiday season vigil for peace on the sidewalk in front of the Military Recruiting Center at 2121 41st Avenue in Capitola. And what's said about that is, we gather with a particular concern and alarm over the growing posture of aggression toward Iran being taken by the U.S. government, the military, and the intelligence sectors. The false buildup of justification for military intervention echoes loudly what we have seen in so many U.S.-led wars, especially against Iraq. We welcome the returning American soldiers from Iraq theater. Speak for yourself, Sherry. and the joy this brings for their families, but we remember also with great sadness those who have died or been grievously wounded with lifelong effect, not to mention the people that these brave soldiers have been murdering overseas for their mercenary bosses in the Pentagon and in private security agencies. And those who think we've gone out of Iraq, better look again. There's the largest embassy in the world with, I think it's 15,000 employees and 10,000 security people, some huge figure like that, plus a dozen military bases all over the country. And, you know, that's a nice provocation for continuing the war on those folks and continuing resistance. It's outrageous. Outrageous. We send our thoughts and blessings out to the soldiers, Pup writes, still serving in Afghanistan and their families, and to the people and families of Afghanistan as well, hoping for a swift end to that conflict that is now over 10 years old. You know, it's kind of hard, like saying, you know, we send our concerns out to the Luftwaffe and the Wehrmacht who are occupying France, and we also have a lot of concern for the French citizens who are being occupied. Yeah, that's nice. I think, however, you have to really apportion responsibility and blame where it is, and it's obviously you have to identify who the aggressor is and clarify that, and that's what I try to do. It's the United States, unfortunately, NATO, and the other allied powers. And yeah, no, I haven't got a lot of sympathy for Al-Qaeda's attacks on civilians or the Taliban's rules and abuses toward women, but I also don't regard that in any way as a justification for U.S. invasion of these countries. That's ridiculous, and in fact creates more of the same, as I think any level-headed person can see, frankly. Not much that we have in the way of level-headed folks. So, let's hear some more from a week ago, and I'm going to be playing considerably more on Sunday when I come back with a longer show. Also have on the air with me Ken, who spoke at the Santa Cruz City Council two nights ago. He is losing his house. It's going to be foreclosed on. The last date that I heard that was planning to be taken was in a couple of weeks. That may have been postponed. But he's going to be talking about that. And Occupy Santa Cruz may be assisting him. And we'll be actually interviewing him in person at 9:30 on Sunday morning.
And there is food.
And again, this is Friday the 9th, and it's really kind of, we're going to be following some of the General Assembly here.
But, and there's a couple signs, joy and justice to the world, smile. So it's nearing 7 o'clock. It's now about 7:10. I'm leaving the meeting early. This was the first meeting which I actually took one of the defined roles. I was the stacker.
Guess I didn't do the General Assembly. Often I take notes at it and I pass on. I don't usually play them on the air, but sometimes they're interesting. Apparently this time they either got recorded over or possibly didn't get taken. Ah, because I was the stacker at the time, which means I was the person, one of the people who selected who spoke next or identified those who were speaking in the order that they raised their hands.
And picked out people in the audience. There was an impassioned report from Joel, one of the, I guess, eight people arrested, although I'd actually only heard there were, say, the cops said eight, somebody else, the jail people said six. The one person is still apparently in jail from the police attack on the homeless encampment of Thursday morning. Joel describes how police advanced without giving people time to pick up their stuff, destroying rather than helping people get their property, destroying property, trampling it, making no attempt to salvage it. He recited how Gabriella, an activist who was also working to help people get rid of move their stuff, although he wasn't talking so much about that, tripped. And she, police then hit her with a baton. They were backing up as the police line backed up. They were doing absolutely nothing except they were singled out as individuals. They were arrested, surrounded, and taken into custody. And jail wasn't so bad, as was his account.
To
the grim jailhouse warning from Jack, who's our medical guy, who apparently has spent some time in prison, and he was very kind of dour in his warnings about prison and how you can go into the jail on a traffic ticket and not come out. I wanted to speak about, well, that certainly isn't the norm. I mean, certainly anything can happen. You can get in your car and then not make it home. That also happens. So I don't think it's important to be unduly afraid of jail. It's not a picnic, but it's also not a death sentence, generally speaking. So Jean cooked up a nice meal, but she seemed to indicate that after tomorrow's meal at the afternoon assembly that there weren't likely to be other meals planned. Also,
and I was wrong about that. Meals have continued to be served by this feisty, industrious chef who dredges out food from God knows where every evening at 6 o'clock for people at the General Assembly on the courthouse steps. Everyone's invited.
Working groups, which are still around, don't have much to work on because the camp is gone, and other groups are sort of, some of them are still meeting, the strategy group, well, that's the one group I remember Ed Fry is the leader of. And downtown, I wanted to note, the penguin statues are apparently going to be recalled, or they're going to move on, or they're moving back into the artist's dungeon or whatever, because there's a sort of a notice up, at least near Streetlight Records, that the penguins are going to be gone in December, early December of 2011. And frankly, they can't be gone too soon for me. So there you are.
The penguin statues along Pacific Avenue, of course, are pretexts for stopping people from sitting within 14 feet, creating forbidden zones, and also peacefully requesting spare change, even silently with a sign, becomes illegal within 14 feet of these. And again, it creates essentially more and more restricted space where only the commercial tourists who are very well behaved by moving along and not trying to engage in any community activities on the sidewalk or, let's say, express any needs that poor people might have, that becomes the sick norm in Santa Cruz, a kind of a pseudo-festive atmosphere at Christmas time, which has nothing to do with the economic realities of the time, so people can be kind of coaxed into spending more money in the stores. It's kind of disgusting, but there you are. It's a habitual holiday event. And they do that. And I think what I'm going to do is get back to the Oakland interviews that I was doing and monologue that I was running through. Let's hear some more of that. And again, your phone calls are, of course, welcome. If you have some accounts, breaking news, interjections, reactions to what you're hearing, I'd like to hear it. My phone number here is 831-427-3772. 427-3772. And if you want to reach me off air, you can call the Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom Line, 423-HUFF. Let's hear some more of the... this has happened. This happened 3 days later. You were listening to Friday's monologue. This is a Monday's monologue, although I think we get some more interviews in here of people among the thousands who went to Oakland and other cities to occupy the ports and shut them down in solidarity with labor groups who were fighting the anti-union activities of a couple of large corporations, shippers connected with Goldman Sachs, New York Bank or New York Investment Company. Let's see if I have any of the specifics of that. You can get more of that online in case you haven't already seen it. Aha, we have a caller. Amazing. Let's hear who's calling in. Yo, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Yes, good evening, Mr. North. At least I presume where you are, it's the evening.
Indeed, it is evening, a frosty one. It sounds like you're in the middle of the day over there, halfway around the world. I recognize your voice, caller.
I don't know, certainly no. It's dark and dire outside.
Oh, but, really?
I was interested in your to hear your comments about the current situation at Occupy Santa Cruz, the arrests, and this, I think, reflects what's happening at a lot of the Occupy sites in the U.S., going back, I guess, to the one in Wall Street where Mayor Bloomberg, about a month ago, stepped in and, you know, removed the tents. This is an interesting contrast, at least to the Occupy Frankfurt situation, which is where there seems to be a certain rapport, I think, between the police and the occupiers.
We should say, caller, that you are in fact calling from what, a city in Germany yourself. How close are you to Frankfurt?
I'm actually quite close, Mr. Norris.
Uh-huh. And Frankfurt is a city of what, 500,000, or how big is Frankfurt?
Well, yeah, I don't know, 600,000 or 700,000, but then if you take the metropolitan area, the so-called Rhein-Main area, it's probably closer to 2 million. It's one of the larger population centers in Germany.
Have you actually been to Occupy Frankfurt and seen it yourself?
I have, yes.
How big is it? Or when you were there, how big was it, I should say?
Oh, I'd say, you know, of course, you have to take into account the, you know, the current weather situation. But I'd say, you know, close to 100 when I was last there. And I do think, though the winter has been fairly mild so far, but I think it's likely that it will remain intact until the warmer weather in the spring and then expand again. But I guess there's several reasons why there haven't been any of the, you know, problems and confrontations over here that there have been in the States. And I myself, during a recent visit to New York, happened just, in fact, the day before Mayor Bloomberg intervened on the Occupy Wall Street one.
Mm-hmm.
Superficially, the resemblances are there. They're there, of course. Tents in both areas.
Are they doing protests in downtown Frankfurt against the big banks or against foreclosures?
Well, yes and no. The site of the Occupy Frankfurt is in fact right next to the European Central Bank, which of course is located in Frankfurt. That being a symbolic gesture, I suspect, to indicate their disapproval with the policies of the European Central Bank. That all ties into the economic issue, which I don't want to get into now. But interestingly enough, when the head of the Deutsche Bank, which is the largest bank in Germany and one of the largest in Europe, and doesn't have a very good press here, when their head Joseph Ackermann received recently a letter bomb, apparently originating with some leftist group in Italy, the protest movement here actually made a statement saying that they rejected violence in any form.
I think a lot of I think a lot of the local, a lot of the occupiers throughout the U.S. have done the same thing. So I think that's a general. And here in Santa Cruz, you know, the 75 River Street, though many of us did not regard going into a bank, a vacant bank, and, you know, trying to turn it into a community center was any form of violence. It certainly upset some people who worship at the altar of private property. So, yeah, I mean, but sure. I think that there's been a general concern about, not concern, but an attempt to clarify that this is a movement that is certainly nonviolent toward people. And I think generally there's a lot of almost dogmatic nonviolence and determined nonviolence. So if you're suggesting that may be one of the reasons that Frankfurt is left alone, the Occupy Frankfurt is left alone, and other here in the United States, we have the movement shut down. I don't know if that really is the criteria.
No, I take your point, and I certainly wouldn't want to do that, nor did I intend to do that. Would it be fair to say, because I'm, of course, familiar through your own role and my listening to your programs periodically, that there is the issue of homelessness in Santa Cruz and the very specific issues that merchants have on the one hand and that homeless people have on the other hand, and the close connection apparently between the police and the merchants here and the city council, probably, and maybe because Santa Cruz is smaller too, give it maybe a different flavor, certainly than is the case in Frankfurt, which is a larger city, but
I mean, I actually,
that may be more of a specific issue to Santa Cruz than Frankfurt.
Yeah, I think I think homeless involvement in the Occupy Santa Cruz and other places it's been a significant factor, and one which has created an opportunity for police and political authorities to dismiss Occupy as sort of some large iniquitous den of homeless, drug using, needle shooting, folks who are not primarily concerned with any political objectives other than the despicable objective of surviving the winter, which is, of course, not something that's appropriate and is not guaranteed by the Constitution of the United States, as we all know. You can survive if you have the means to survive. If you don't, well, tough shit. But I think that, I think your point is well taken, that it becomes more the pretext than the reason for a cracking down, because I think it's actually true. As I said earlier in the show, you may have heard me say that the crime rate in Santa Cruz, and I don't have any stats to show this, in any documented way, but the impression I'm getting is it's dropped around even homeless, quote, crimes, like, urinating, defecating, camping in places and trespassing. That's, of course, been obviated by the fact that people had a place to go. They had porta potties that were rented. They had food that they could use. They had also, there was a place they could store their property so that there was less theft. I mean, all these things, I think, made it clear that when they authorities went after the homeless encampment in Santa Cruz, it had nothing to do with crime and had everything to do with a sort of a pretext for asserting authority and stopping a protest. Not that the protest is magically going to overturn the government here or anything of that sort, but it's just, I think, the prickly, privileged sense that authorities have, and also our police department, got pissed at the 75 River Street occupation of the bank that happened, and moreover that it embarrassed them when they showed up with this huge, massive force, and then realized that if they tried to remove people from the bank in a violent way, which is what they were initially threatening to do, they would probably be faced with a violent reaction, not from the Occupy Santa Cruz people, but from people who were watching, who were not so happy with the police for a variety of reasons, who were two blocks from the middle of the downtown area. And
you mentioned the police. I mean, that's an interesting point, because I wonder, and this would probably be an unfair overgeneralization on my part, but it does seem, at least now, that maybe the police here, and I don't know if that's true in other European countries, are somewhat less confrontational than I gather is the case with police in many of the Occupy movements in the U.S., particularly Oakland, New York, and I think even Santa Cruz, which may have something to do with their training, but also I think, interestingly enough, that the police, although they are, civil servants with reasonable pay, still, I think, identify themselves to some extent with the protesters and against the banks, which, have a very bad press in Germany and Europe as a whole. And I wouldn't think that, if that's true, that was necessarily the case with police on your side of the water, for whatever reason.
I think you may well be right, although there have been cases of, one notorious case back east of a Occupy that went and occupied the foreclosed, about to be foreclosed home of a police officer and stopped the foreclosure, which was heralded by those who like to have fantasies about the virtues of policemen everywhere, that this is a way of, you know, joining together with the police departments to support the 99% against the 1%. And, you know, I think that's great. I don't think anybody, whether a police officer or anybody else, should have their home seized by a bank as part of this real estate profiteering scam that goes on worldwide. But I think that you got to recognize realistically that police departments, because of their institutional structure and their command structure and the nature of how things are set up, are not likely to be the on the main front of this particular movement. They're hired to rein it in. They're hired to stop it. They're hired to enforce regulations which the city can use usually as a mask for stopping the protest, but it stops the visible protest. Although, as I said, we have this Reoccupy coming up on the 17th. It's not just us in Santa Cruz. We're taking our cue from Wall Street, which is doing a reoccupation. And there are some real questions even in my mind about the wisdom of, in the middle of winter, trying to focus on camping as a matter of something that is a primary part of the protest. I've been a long time advocate of the right to sleep legally somewhere and the right to sleep protectively with camping gear if you have to. And I also believe that I'm sympathetic with Keith McHenry, who talks about the Food Not Bombs co-founder, who talks about the need. The only way we're going to stop the wars of aggression abroad by the U.S. are to be visibly present on a continuous 24-hour basis in the way that Middle Eastern people have been doing and are doing in Syria, you know, and I guess they were doing it in Egypt. I guess that's kind of stopped with the latest electoral nonsense that they're trying to pull over the people.
It says that all politics is local. Would you say that the Occupy Santa Cruz protests have been helped by all the very commendable work that you and your colleagues at Freak Radio and others over the years have done? Because certainly many of their issues in a local sense, as I had mentioned a few minutes ago, seem to tie very much in with yours, so that there was already sort of a platform, a structure, a consciousness existing in Santa Cruz when they began their movement. So in that sense, it was maybe more evolutionary than revolutionary.
Well, you know, I'd like to say, we provided the foundation, we Huffsters of Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, who stood up for the rights of poor and homeless people to sleep, you know, somewhere. But the fact is, I don't think that's true. I think that a lot of people who came to the Occupy movement were, you know, inspired by Occupy Wall Street, and they had nothing to do with and knew nothing about the laws or even the practices of the police and the Santa Cruz City Council or the sheriffs regarding how they treat homeless people.
But they know that now.
Now they're beginning to learn it, but they didn't learn it because of what we did. They learned it because of their own experience. Yeah, what police are doing. Although they begin to listen to us. So, for example, I had a meeting yesterday, the first Huff meeting that actually had five or six militant Occupy activists in the Huff meeting, and that is almost unheard of. Although we've been holding our Huff meetings at the site of Occupy Santa Cruz, now we move to another place indoors because Occupy Santa Cruz essentially only.
How large would you say the current movement of Occupy Santa Cruz is? In other words, people, wherever it is.
Yeah, I'll talk about that in a moment. But I mean, what I'm saying is that we had for the first time activists at this Huff meeting, partially because Huff has been involved in, we've been to court many times on the kinds of bogus charges that they're using against the Occupy activists. They've been used against us as well, in essentially an attempt to disperse a public assembly. They did this a year ago with Peace Camp 2010. So that's encouraging, you know, and I think we're getting some credibility because of that, and hopefully we're be able to give our experience to those who are in Occupy Santa Cruz and facing all kinds of crap. And the answer to your question is, how large is it you're asking? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, just roughly how many, Occupy Santa Cruz protesters 24/7, or however you want to put it.
Well, there is no 24/7 right now, as far as I can see. There are people who are regularly showing up at the assemblies in the cold, in the dark, illegally, because they're illegal after 7 o'clock at night, and they don't go away.
Yeah.
So they're still there, but they don't stay out there, because if you try to set up a protective tent, they know that you're likely to be arrested. But I think that may change on the 17th, day after tomorrow, when the reoccupy hits, or they may not. I mean, as I said before, I have mixed feelings about the effectiveness of camping. A part of me says, you know, it's really the only way to go. Another part of me says, we got to be more creative as well. We don't want to be stuck in one particular rut of spending all our time fighting this particular battle, but maybe it needs to be fought. I'm still in kind of internally divided on what to do. Perhaps you can give me some thoughts, caller, on how to proceed. Maybe you can fly over from your Frankfurt lair or wherever the hell you are and, you know, join the group. We could use your expertise, perhaps.
Well, anyway, it's been a pleasure, as always, to talk with you, Mr. North, and I commend you again on your work, and, yeah, quite interesting, your observations.
Yeah, and if you come up
I'll be following with interest what happens in
Syracuse,
not only on the Occupy movement, on the
I appreciate that, caller, and I would also hope that if you get, I think one of the differences between this large city that you're near and our large urban areas and even smaller ones like Santa Cruz, is that we do have far less of a safety net than the one that's getting shredded all over Europe with these latest, you know, with the banks demanding essentially that, you know, everybody assume their debts and that everybody essentially suffer because of their profiteering. But I still think, you know, it may, I'd like to get any reports you have on what's actually going on in those cities regarding homeless people and how they're being treated. I think we've talked about it in the past. So let's
indeed
talk about that in a future show if you're up for it.
Very good.
Hey, thank you, man.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. And phone lines are open. That was a call from Germany, believe it or not. And we have another caller calling in. My goodness. Hi there. You're on Free Radio with Robert, I hope.
Yeah, hey, this is Jeff.
The infamous smart meter fighter, Jeff?
Sure. We'll work with that.
All right. Well, I'm glad you got in. I know that you have been, well, there's been some interesting and acrimonious exchanges at Board of Supervisors and some interesting information that you and I talked about on the phone a couple of days ago regarding the supervisors grilling the PG&E Robotatron, who was giving her, standard rap endlessly in front of the Board of Supervisors.
Have you seen the video yet?
I have not seen the video.
Okay.
If it's up, I'll play
it. Well, remind me, there's a YouTube link. I got it up on YouTube.
Oh, please. And
today.
How can you, don't give me the link, but tell me how to Bing for it so that our audience can hear. I should say that before you do that, let's introduce what's going on. You have been fighting smart meters for quite a period of time, and partially as a health problem, partially as a privacy issue, partially as an accountability issue. We actually talked about six or seven different concerns that you have around smart meters. I think the primary one is the health issue.
Yeah, the more you dig into it, the worse it gets, too. And so, but it started, the primary thing was the health concerns and just the right to choice. It just didn't sound right that PG&E was basically saying their easement on your property with their meter, basically if they wanted to put a mini nuclear power plant on the side of their house, they think they have the right to do that. So.
And of course, there's been when we've had debated this issue with you and those who support smart meters, which the smart meters are to be, for those who don't know, new meters that emit electromagnetic radiation of a particular kind to identify at any particular moment how much electricity you're using in the house. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, basically, what it is the meter itself collects the data, and the meters could actually be manually read if a meter reader came and downloaded the information. So the meters themselves just collect the energy usage. But then, on top of that, they've added a wireless module that's designed by Silver Springs Networks. By the way, Al Gore is one of the major investors in that company, and as soon as he invested, they got $530 million worth of government grant contracts. So the wireless module that's added to the meter then sends out your usage information through the mesh network, the wireless mesh network, and then it works its way back to the PG&E billing center.
Now, in Santa Cruz, as we've talked about in previous shows, activists were able to secure through the Board of Supervisors, or stupid vipers, as I like to call them, a moratorium on the installation of smart meters, which, of course, Sheriff Wowak then refused to enforce. And in response, Stop Smart Meters and other activists came together to attempt to recall the good sheriff and have been proceeding with that. That's a minor issue on this particular phone call, which we don't have too much time. We only got 12 minutes left in the show. But how's that going, briefly?
Don't tell him, but it was in the beginning. Some people could say it was a stunt. I would not label it as a stunt, but it was to show displeasure, and also a number of people wrote letters, made calls to the sheriff to ask why nobody was enforcing the moratorium. In fact, the installation yard that Wellington Energy is using to install smart meters is located in the heart of Santa Cruz County, right at 38th and Portola in Live Oak. And it just is somewhat absurd to think that we had this moratorium banning smart meters, and the installation yard, like the mother ship that they were operating out of, was right in the middle of the jurisdiction where the ordinance was supposed to be in effect.
Now, in fact, other jurisdictions have also tried to have moratoriums on smart meters,
That's
right?
Correct. Capitola passed one, and Watsonville passed one.
How about other places in the state?
Oh, yeah, all through the state. I think the number's 47.
Have any of these jurisdictions actually had sheriffs or other authorities enforce these moratoriums?
They took it so seriously and took a strong stance where their mayor was just very, like Fairfax, the town of Fairfax up in Marin County, or San Rafael. I'm not sure which county it is.
Marin County.
I think. But anyway, the town of Fairfax still does not have any smart meters deployed in their area because their mayor, Larry Bragman, was adamantly opposed to the smart meters for a number of reasons, including, his citizens, got him to that level of passion about the
But in fact, those who favor smart meters or who are neutral but skeptical on the side would claim that this is the authority of the Public Utilities Commission, not the local boards of supervisors and sheriff's departments. Is that correct?
Yeah, and then folks, though, who've really taken their job seriously, where they really do want to do work to protect the will of their people and fight for the will of their people and such. It's debatable. Well, actually, it's not really debatable. The local jurisdictions do have the right to protect the health and well-being of their citizens. That is.
But you haven't been able to convince any local jurisdiction to do that, right?
Well, here's where it gets complicated. Is I know a few of the board of supervisors and people in our local government in Santa Cruz County, at least, in their heart of hearts, do not want smart meters, and they'd really like to fight this. But the unfortunate reality is, and it took a lot of digging to get to this meeting with the sheriff, county council, board of supervisors, speaking to them, it wasn't that they decided. The sheriff decided not to enforce the moratorium, but that was after reviewing the process and actually having some communications from the PUC and PG&E that if our county actually did try and enforce that moratorium, there would be courts. Sorry, it's getting late in the day. My brain's fried. But there would be lawsuits. And PG&E's armada of attorneys
I heard the same excuses for why they should destroy rent control for RV homes, that we don't want to pay the money in the lawsuits, even though the lawsuits would not necessarily succeed. But let's jump ahead of that, because the reason we are talking today is because 2 days ago at the Board of Supervisors, at least one older woman came forward and expressed concern that PG&E was about to cut off her power because she had replaced a smart meter with the previous kind of meter, which is called a...
analog. Yeah, they call it
an analog meter.
The term that most people use is analog or electromechanical meter, but
right,
that means the little spinning disc.
And I know you and I spoke about how this was... going to be an alternative that some people were using, replacing their own meters, and that PG&E was complaining, but apparently the Public Utilities Commission was accepting this at some level or even requiring PG&E to show some respect for this. We have about, as I say, 8 or 9 minutes. What happened at the Board of Supervisors?
Okay. Yeah, well, here's exactly what happened. I'll give a little backstory. Is we have a number of people in Santa Cruz County that just really were experiencing pretty extreme symptoms from the smart meters. And one of these people was Peggy. She's been in the papers and on the news now. She's 75 years old, a single woman. I believe she's a retired school principal. But as soon as the smart meter was installed in her house, and by the way, the Wellington installer came, knocked on her door early in the morning, she came out in her bathrobe and said, "I do not want that smart meter on my house." And I guess he had already installed it or was halfway through working on it, so he kind of ignored her and installed the meter anyway. I guess she didn't really, she was upset about it, but didn't think too much about it after that. And then I think fairly soon after that, her ears just really started ringing. I guess she didn't connect the dots that it could be the smart meter, but she started going, this is a typical story, started going to the doctors, ear, nose, and throat doctors, trying to figure out why her ears were ringing, and no one could tell her why, and then she finally read some articles in the Good Times, I think, where she read about Moniz, another gal who had the same issue and had removed her smart meter, and at that point, Peggy went, "Oh my gosh, maybe that's why my ears are ringing, because this stupid smart meter on my house." And so she called Moniz, who had also already removed her meter. She found out how to do the procedure of hiring an electrician, and you take pictures of the smart meter reading before you take it off, and then you put on the analog meter. And, of course, you call PG&E and let them know you're going to do it. They say, "Bad, we're going to get really mad at you," and then they say, but the customer just says, "I can't take this anymore. If you won't remove the smart meter, I'll do it myself." So that's what she did. Then about a week ago, we went with a number of these people who had removed their smart meters. I think it was about 10 people. We went to a PG&E payment center in Capitola to go return the smart meters. So they all lined up. A lot of them were women, you know, in their 40s to 70-year-old women standing in line. PG&E at the payment center freaked out and called the cops. And what do you know, 10 older women standing in line peacefully, and 6 Capitola police come, basically raid, storm the place, tell everyone to get out, and then slam the door, and they closed the payment center after that. It was a very bizarre...
They got front page coverage in the Sentinel, right?
Yeah.
It did?
It did. It got on the news quite a bit.
I don't think it got on the Sentinel at all, actually.
Yeah, hold on just one moment.
Hello? So we're talking with Jeff Norwell of Stop Smart Meters. Go ahead, Jeff.
And then, and after that, PG&E, I guess PG&E, the top brass, held a meeting and just said, "We can't have this. This could create a whole cascade effect of thousands of people removing their smart meters. We need to stamp this out immediately and crack down. No mercy, retaliation." And so they immediately contacted all these people and said, "Either we put the smart meter back on your house within 24 hours, or we're shutting your power off." And so all the people said, "Well, can't we just compromise and can't you just put an analog meter back on our house and just consider that we're on the delay list, just like everyone else who knew about the delay phone number? Can you just let us get on the delay list and put the analog meter back on. In fact, some of these smart meters had been installed before a delay list had ever existed with PG&E. So that seems like a fair argument, but PG&E said, no way, no deal, we're not negotiating with anyone, smart meter or your power off. So then on Tuesday morning, we went into the Board of Supervisors.
When there was an item on the agenda, right?
And it was on the agenda. We had...
What was the item on the agenda?
It was because the moratorium's expiring at the end of December here, the end of the year, so we wanted to renew it. And there's definitely legal reasons why the moratorium should be continued, because later on, if there's litigation and such...
Did they vote to continue it?
They actually, what they did, because it got on the agenda at the last minute, they voted to review and research and then actually have a full vote at the next meeting in January.
Tuesday in January?
I believe it's, I forget what the actual date is. And then they also voted to write a letter to the PUC demanding a free opt-out as opposed to the current proposal. And again, this is a proposal that has not been passed. But the proposal at the PUC...
Unfortunately, we only have about 2 or 3 minutes, so get...
Yeah, so anyway...
The nitty-gritty, the drama was that...
Okay, well then, anyway, so these gals told their stories at the PUC. It turns out their power got shut off while they were at the Board of Supervisors meeting. So they told the Board of Supervisors what was going on, and after they told their stories, Ellen Peary, Supervisor Peary, said, oh, by the way, we noticed that we've got a PG&E rep in the audience. Would you like to come up and explain what on earth your company is doing? And she did reluctantly came up. Her name's Wendy Sarsfield. And for over 20 minutes, the supervisors questioned and many would say grilled her, trying to understand what on earth PG&E is thinking 2 weeks before Christmas, shutting off the power for elderly people and families with children. What on earth are they thinking, and why
how
won't
has,
they just put
has,
it
the, has power been restored, Jeff, to this woman?
Still no. No. They still were saying smart meter or no power. And
she is,
course,
what is she? What is she currently doing? Walking around at night and flapping her hands to stay warm?
Yeah, she's got flashlights. I think one of her neighbors ran an extension cord from their house through her window so she can have one light. She has no heat. I think she stayed with a relative one day, but all of her food spoiled in her fridge. And it's a complete nightmare. We've got a support group of people who live in her area that are stopping in saying hi, but I guess she was the hottest item in town yesterday. I think she did like 4 or 5, maybe even 6 TV news interviews.
Well, not a word in the Sentinel that I've seen, but maybe...
Not about her, but the Sentinel did cover the Board of Supervisors.
In other words, they cover the chatter of the bureaucrats, but not not a freezing 75-year-old woman in her home.
No,
very interesting. Yeah, it sounds like our Sentinel. We're talking with Jeff Narwhal. Have I got your name right there, Jeff?
Well, I think I do like that. I consider that a compliment because I like the Narwhal whale. But my last name is Nordahl.
Darn. Okay, but, you're a doll as far as I'm concerned. I'm going to make you a Nordahl in the future.
Okay.
You know, I got to go because Uncle Dennis is unraveling all his armaments here. But I would love to have you come back on Sunday with an update on this if we
can. I will do my very best.
9:30 to 1 is when we
this.
Do our show. And how can people get more information and stay up on this story?
Yeah, go to stopsmartmeters.org is the website that is run by a lot of the folks involved in this. And then if you want to do an online complaint about smart meters, we now have smartmeterhelp.com. And you fill out that form online, and then we send that on to the PUC, PG&E, and all of our local officials.
You've got a lot more to say, and I really hope we can talk to you again. If not, maybe I can get an interview with you on the off air, and we can air it. But I think it's really important what you're talking about. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
The big picture, and PG&E is owned by all the Wall Street banks, by the way. So as far as the Occupy movement, a lot of folks don't realize it. It's the banks that own PG&E. It's an investor-owned utility.
You know, you're attacking the very fabric of our nation. I don't want to hear this kind
of
stuff.
Well, this is what's going on. Wall Street owns monopolies. very scary.
Thank you, Jeff, for being on the air. Senor Nordahl.
Yes.
And we will
okay, see you later. Nice to speak with
Sunday.
You. Okay.
All right,
bye.
That's it for Bathrop's. Thank you, Jeff. That's it bye. For Bathrop Spears Broadsides today. I'll be back again on Sunday at 9:30, and also I'll be taking names and property descriptions of property destroyed at noon on Saturday at the Reoccupy Santa Cruz in front of the courthouse. Join me there if you'd like. We'll be going all day, assuming I don't get sent to bed by Dennis's vicious coughing in the studio.
Germs or viruses, it's just dinner.
It's just dinner, my goodness. Well, thank you, Dennis. You should stay tuned for Dennis's From the Cream to the Dregs. He may have some updates on the latest shenanigans of the Coastal Commission, which I talked to him about earlier but didn't have time to put up on the air. Talk to you again next week, and I will take this call off the air. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides.
Here's a song. It's also from the last album. It tells the story of how we recorded it and what went wrong when we did it. It happened in Switzerland. The song's thing called Smoke on the Water.